You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Totally the wrong music, okay. Mike hates Bruce Springsteen, so with apologies, let me re-cue it.
No. Yeah, he loves baseball though.
That's called I lured him in with a piece of bread. Okay, say it. No, say it. Say the Yankees are better than the Red Sox. Say it. I want to hear it.
They're not better.
Why do you have such a problem saying it?
Mac, we're not even halfway through yet.
Oh, you said that in the first month. Oh, it's only a month. Look,
in the first month, they were, what, 5-6 games ahead? Now,
And now what?
Beat up. It'll be time.
All right. At some point, you are going to have to fess up, okay? You are going to have to say the words,
yes.
Okay? Say the words.
We'll wait till the end. Wait till the fat lady's done singing.
Wow. All right. Just for the record, so everybody knows. So the other day, you know, Mike doesn't want to talk about it. The Red Sox are beating the Yankees 5-3 in what, the eighth inning? Who do you think sends out a text message? Anybody got a score update on the Red Sox Yankees game? see the selective game that he plays? I was sitting here doing some work watching the game, and I just looked. I'm like, you know what? It never ends, does it? It never fucking ends. So, being the stand-up guy that I am, unlike James Comey, I said it's 5-3, and then Yankees score a run on a wild pitch, boom, 5-4, and I know Mike's sitting there sweating, going, no.
Oh, I was already, I told Tina, I said, shit, I may have been talking shit too early.
He jinxed them because it happens. And then the ninth inning, the Red Sox brought in their flame-throwing reliever, and the Yankees had their, you know, top three hitters up, the 1, 2, and 3 guys, and all capable of hitting home runs. It was, you know, it's awesome baseball theater, pitch by pitch. So, it was good. It was good. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing like being at those kind of games, too, where there's all that hate in the building. I love that kind of stuff, so. Anyway, I want to ask you. I did a little commentary. I don't do it often, but I actually did like a segment of commentary today on James Comey, and I just want to get your thoughts. And I'll give you my take, and you can react to it. You and I both have had the privilege of being around some incredible leaders in our careers, and they there's a few of them that are now. At the highest levels of our national government. And I watched all of the testimony of Mr. Comey yesterday. And there's some guys that get to those places by following the rules. They don't buck the system. They're kind of company men. And they don't say shit if they have a mouth full of it. And so when I was watching it yesterday, and then there's other people, and I said this about H.R. McMaster, guys like Dunford, and Mattis, and Kelly, and that if you tell them to tell a lie and put a gun to their head, they'll look at you and say, pull the trigger. I'm not doing it. They are jihadists. They will burn it down. They don't care.
Right.
Comey doesn't strike me as that guy. When the first thing when he
no, he's a company man.
When he and so my point about all of this in my commentary was he shrank from his duty as the leader of the FBI. When Loretta Lynch told him, "Don't call it an investigation," which you know Comey said I'd never heard this, call it a matter. He said, but it wasn't a hill worth dying on. So what hill was worth dying on? Okay. And so you watch that.
He doesn't have one.
Well, and that's my point. Is that he took an oath and he, in my opinion, he shrank. And he can make up all the excuses that he wanted. He should have told Loretta Lynch, hey, Madam Attorney General, I'm not doing that. We do investigations here. I'm not going to use the political terminology that the Clinton campaign is using. I won't do that. All right. And so if you don't want me to speak on it, I'll defer all comment to you. And then people can infer what they want. I don't think he had a choice in releasing after. And Loretta Lynch, I mean, she didn't fare too well yesterday. It's not like you can just walk up and talk to the Attorney General of the United States when she's on an airplane. Okay? She has security people, and I don't care if it's Bill Clinton or anybody. They have to be contacted, and she has to say, okay, bring him in. And she should have said, I can't tell him, you know, I can't. He can call me on the phone if he cares to. I cannot do this in public. But she didn't. So, I mean, to me, her judgment is incredibly flawed. Comey then, I don't think, has a choice but to go public with what he did. And I don't have a problem with that. The truth, you know, ought to be the truth. Then there's no doubt in my mind, Mike, and look, both of us have worked for people that I don't want to use the word unsavory, but they don't always follow the rules. And when you go to work for somebody like that, and we're probably two people like that, we don't always follow the rules, but in a good way, not in a bad way. So, but right. Donald Trump, you know, has a very mixed reputation in terms of being a rule follower. He's a bullier. He gets things done. That's the way he is. Comey must have been warned dozens of times by people who had crossed paths with Trump or what, hey, you know, Jim, you need to be careful. When you deal with him, you keep your hand on your wallet, blah, 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 blah. And for him to say when he met with the president and the president told the attorney general to leave the room, what did he think was going to happen? Right?
Right.
And so when Trump says, I hope you can go easy on Flynn, there's only one answer to that as the attorney general. Mr. President, I can't have this conversation with you.
Right.
That's the only response. And he says he was stunned. Okay. So look, I'll give you maybe you were stunned when he said it. Okay. But a minute later, 2 minutes later, 3 minutes later, you didn't sober up as the number one official in the FBI and look at him and say, Mr. President, I can't have this. Or even on your way to the car when you started writing your fucking notes, you should have got back out of your car, walked back into the White House and said, I need to talk to the president. It's important, Mr. President.
Right.
And you do. It was just, and then to leak, to give his notes to somebody else to leak. What the fuck? Honestly. And the more I sat there and watched it, I thought, you know what? The guys I know, first of all, I would tell you this. Jim Mattis would have respectfully looked at him and said, I can't have another word of this conversation with you. As the head of the FBI.
But you're talking about a guy, but you're talking about people that have no sense of moral courage. They won't do what's right if they were on fire.
No, and that's what, to me, Comey kind of wraps himself in this Boy Scout thing, and then when he gets asked pointedly, why didn't you say something, he says, I don't know. Bro, that's what you're there for, right, Mike? You're the defender.
You're the director of the FBI. Yeah, you can't say, I mean, come on.
I
watched a little bit of it, and it was just like.
I was stunned. You know, okay, I got it. You were stunned. Then what? You shake it off, right?
Yeah, they don't.
You grab your rifle and you shoot at somebody. A lot of people get stunned.
These political hacks, though, that are surprised with people, you know, like these people are so good at doing what they do. That's why they stay up there. I mean, Comey's the politician, man. Don't get him wrong. I mean, he knows how to play the game. And then when he's playing Mr. Innocent on the stands the other day, he's like, please.
Right. No, I just, again.
That's why I said. They got rid of him. He's a he's not the right guy for the job. Right. You know, you need people up there that are going to actually stand for what they believe in. And we just don't have it anymore.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's disturbing. And then you watch the political thing that gets played with it is equally disturbing. So again, you had the same.
I agree. You
had the same thoughts as I did. I want to ask you. I had my chef buddy on, Kim, this morning. We were talking about shish kebab. Do you have a shish kebab? Do you make shish kebab? Do you have a recipe? Do you have any secret?
No, shish kebabs for the lazy.
What? Oh. What is
the
it?
The people with no imagination do shish kebabs, so I don't do those.
What do you mean, no imagination? What are you talking about? It's like...
Oh, let's stick a bunch of meat with some vegetables on a stick and then grill it.
As opposed to, let's just stick the meat on there? At least it's a little bit creative.
It's not creative, my book.
Oh, really?
It's boring. Yeah.
I find it exciting. It's got, you know, most people will do some kind of teriyaki marinade. You got
ooh.
Some...
Ooh. Boy.
Why are you shish kebab hating today?
I'm not a big shish kebab fan.
Wow. Who knew? It's kind of a summer grilling thing. I would think that you're kind of a bit of a little foodie. I would think that you would be. So I have to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised by that. Okay.
Not me.
Not you. All right. Obviously. Enemy body armor improves. Marines test new bullets. Talk to me. Do we need new bullets? Do we need a new caliber weapon? What would you, give me your thoughts?
Yeah, we need new bullets. We need a new caliber. I mean, at times that we're using the caliber they were using in Vietnam. I mean, that gun came about before I was born, that caliber, and we were using it. And we're now just now looking at a new caliber.
Yes.
And new bullets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've lectured me on this program before. We're using a bullet that's designed to go through paper.
Well, we're using a bullet that was designed for competition shooting. It's like, it cuts paper really well, guys. Puts holes in paper. Yeah, whatever. Once we start fighting militaries that are freaking able targets and dog targets, then we'll be effective. Boy, we'll really tear those targets up.
What about, all right, so give me solutions. First, let's talk weapon, caliber. What would you say, what caliber do we need to go to defeat body armor? Because if anybody's got body armor like us, our stuff bounces off 7.62 rounds.
So we have body armor that will stop, black tip 30 caliber bullets, rounds. Ooh. But not everybody has that.
Right.
So, I mean, what gain do you get for a bigger bullet? You know, people will argue, well, you get more weight. Okay. So let's stay with lesser weight and lesser penetration and lesser capability. Yep. That's smart. That sounds smart too. We tried to go 6.8 caliber or 6.8 millimeter. And that did fare well because that 6.8 drops off real fast. And now they're looking at 6.5, which is a really nice round. It's an even round. It's not really big. It's not really light, but it's got a real flat trajectory. It's pretty accurate.
All right. Let me read you. Let's see. According to General, is it Millie or Miley?
I don't know. Miley Cyrus. General Miley Cyrus.
Mark's Army Chief of Staff, General Mark Miley. All right. I think it's Milley, M-I-L-L-E-Y. He said the Army believes it has a bullet that can penetrate new ballistic plates that are resistant to 5.56 rounds used by soldiers and Marines. We think we have a solution. We know we have developed a bullet that can penetrate these new plates. For more than a year, Marine Corps has been testing the Army's MA-85 Alpha 1 enhanced performance.
Oh, no.
Hold on, let me finish. Stop it! Which is better at penetrating enemy armor, Walsh told lawmakers on Wednesday. In fact, right now, our Marines are deployed to Afghanistan with our weapons using the Army round. One drawback is it impacts the life of the M27 infantry automatic rifle. Your thoughts?
That is the crappiest round. That was a bag of goods that, you know, that took 12 years in development to make the 885 A1. And they couldn't get it right. They still, there's no way they got it right in the last year or last 2 years I've been out. But they were getting ready to field that because, you know, the Army owns the ammunition.
We
follow suit. So, cause we can't afford to buy our own bullet. I mean, that would be, it would break the bank, you know, so. They came out, we bought what this round is called a SOST bullet. The problem comes into is
a what bullet?
Special Operation Science Technology.
Ooh.
It was basically a Hornady tap round, the kind that federal agents use in their rifles. It's got good expansion, really accurate. It doesn't fare well on body armor. But a lot of rounds don't fare well on body armor. So, but the question comes out to you is, who's wearing body armor? Well, we got to fight. Don't fight the wolf on the doorstep. I got that. But the wolves in the tree line don't have body armor either. So who's wearing body armor? You know, and they use it. The thing that makes me upset is when it suits them, they'll argue the point of it's not the individual rifleman that carries the day on the battlefield. And I used to get that all the time, you know, when we try and enhance the weapon systems of the infantrymen. And I'd always get thrown back at me, this is great, but at the end of the day, it's not the individual man that carries the battle. It's the combined arms effect. He's just a cog in the machine. But yet then the Army comes out and says, oh, this new bullet, this everything else, but it's a piece of crap. It doesn't do any more, it doesn't perform any better than the old 855. I mean, for Christ's sakes, the new 885, the tip of it is a steel penetrator, and they came out, and this whole thing was supposed to be a green bullet, so it was not going to have no lead, but they realized that it has to have lead because all the other materials that they used, bismuth and other types of metals,
right,
didn't fare well, so they went back to lead, so it's not a green bullet.
When you say green bullet, what does that mean?
Well, because the Army sold this as a bill of goods that they were going to come out with a bullet that had no lead. So we weren't going to fire any kind of material into the ground that had carried lead anymore.
Okay, and that's an environmental thing, right?
Yeah, so they called it a green bullet. Yeah,
yeah, there you go. That's what we
So this
what we 855 really A1 concerned about.
Has lead. Yeah, it has lead. Yeah, we're a military that's concerned about leaving lead in the ground. Okay. Whatever.
And let me tell you,
all the other
places like Camp Pendleton, Camp Lejeune, Fort Benning, there's so much lead in the ground there. You would never do anything with that. So,
yeah, that's not going to solve your problem, boys. Oh man, what a joke! And I know they were going, and so the army didn't want to accept the Marine Corps' fine. So the joke was, it took us, what, like 8 months and like $120,000 to figure out that this was the bullet. And we bought it off the shelf, and we were using it with great success overseas. The Army had spent 12 years and like hundreds of millions of dollars and still hadn't come up with this bullet. And then at the end, they were feeling the 855A1. They were forcing it down our throat.
And talk to me about that. There's some inertia with it, right? Because we've got all this money and research into it, right?
Oh yeah, they were already hundreds of million dollars down this rabbit hole, and they were not going to turn around and lose that. No,
because you got
that would have been a joke.
You got to stick your head out of the rabbit hole and say, "Can we have a timeout? Can we have an operational pause in this?" What?
What
were we talking about? Yeah, we don't think
so. This whole thing on the bullet.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing that they don't tell you about is, you know, it's not changing the gun caliber. Changing the gun caliber is cheap. That's fairly inexpensive. What's really expensive, what really costs the big money is the round, buying the millions of rounds and then changing the optics and then changing the curriculum of training and changing all the infrastructure to adapt to this new bullet. That's the thing that costs the most money. And then sustaining that. Just switching the rifle, that's easy. That's cheap. So that's why we were forced to stay with the 5.56, the new improved 855 A1. You know, it was like, whatever. This thing's a piece of crap.
First field in 2010, the Marines IAR is currently the M27 made by Heckler Koch. But the Marine Corps has asked other firearm manufacturers if they have weapons that meet IAR requirements, and if so, how expensive it would be and how long it would take to produce 11,000 rifles. The Marines are also working with U.S. Special Operations Command to develop a higher caliber round to defeat enemy body armor, Schrader said. Quote, as late as last week, there are limited technical demonstrations that was done. There was a limited LTI, limited LTD, limited technical demonstration, God almighty, that was done with SOCOM on a higher caliber round, specifically for sniper rifle suites that are working with them that could potentially address that, Schrader said. So we're very in tune with that, and we do understand that's a capability we need to attention to, that is defeating enemy body armor.
Whatever. Someone's being sold, some kind of junk in a bag and seeing what we can come up with. Yeah.
Got it. The gunner is talking about guns today. On a interesting edition of Almarine Radio.
Yeah.
Mike, one thing that you and I never talked about was, and you probably saw a little bit of it. I don't know, or you might not have, but, the investigation into the night crash of, Stranger, Major Rich Norton, was finished, and the result was that, the aircraft was performing absolutely as it was supposed to, and he drove it into the ground. At the time when we discussed it, it was going to be one of two bad outcomes. Either it was going to be the aircraft failed, which is going to be attributable to maintenance, wear and tear, these things rode too long, too hard, or it was going to be pilot error that was going to be attributable to the fact that while they may be proficient, these night strafing runs are not easy to do. And if you're not close to being, while they may be current, proficiency is a much higher number of hours that requires more repetitions that they're currently not getting. And if it wasn't the aircraft, then it would be training, because the guy's got, he's a WTI guy, he's a Top Gun guy, he's got every great punch that a pilot can have. And if a guy like that flies it in the ground, there's only one reason, and that is lack of proficiency.
Right.
Your thoughts?
No, there's the whole, you know, I always said airframe investigations, when something happens, a mishap, you know, they always want to try and get away from it's the aircraft, because it costs more money to change. You know, it's easier to blame the pilot. Oh, much easier. Pilot screwed up. Well, okay, why did the pilot screw up? Well, that doesn't matter. The pilot screwed up. You know, was it a lack because he didn't have enough flight? Oh, no, he's a WTI, a Top Gun instructor. Okay, but what was it? Was he flying enough? I mean, do you need to fly more? Do we need to have more proficiency? It's like riding a bike. But it's a lot cheaper just to blame the pilot than it is to pin the tail on the lack of proficiency because he doesn't have enough flight hours. Because then that costs a lot more money. Okay, to get them back up, they got to increase their flight hours, you know, 50 more flight hours a month or whatever it may be. You know, and that costs a ton of money, because then what comes with that is You got to spend more money on parts. You got to spend more money on upkeep of the aircraft. You got to, you know, got to have more aircraft in the inventory. So I think a lot of those investigations go in already kind of trying to find fault with the pilot and then carry on with status quo. So.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. You know, how we got into this thing, and it's been interesting, you know, the last year that we've been on the air. I did not know a lot about how we got into this situation relative to the F-18 community that we have, that we've gotten in.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it's our own nature in that we never say
mm-hmm.
no. We never say no. Literally, we've flown these things into the condition they've in because we haven't put our hand up and said, yeah, we can't do that. We have Marine Corps Aviation, specifically F-18 and CH-53 Aviation is in the ditch. If we went to war tomorrow in North Korea, the Marine Corps would be non-combat effective relative to the fixed wing. I mean, we would send what we had, certainly, but we don't have much. We had 25% of the inventory.
Correct.
That number is, when you hear it, it's astounding. Now, and that number might have gotten better recently. We continue to convert to the F-35, blah, 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 blah. But it's when you look at that march, and then when you've seen what they've had to do, and we've talked about it, whether it be spare parts, doing that, or training, the number of pilots getting out because they're simply not flying, getting 10 hours a month. When they used to be getting close to 30, it's not what guys come in. I didn't come here to drive into Miramar and PT every day. I came in here to be a pilot
right.
and whatnot. So it's just to me, it's tragic when we have the best pilots in the Marine Corps are not getting enough repetitions to do something, you know, and the investigation says he started his third run 1,100 feet below it, the previous one, which means, you know, probably in his own mind, you know, he's going to pull up sooner. He's also calculating that if he, you know, he wants to expend all rounds so the ammo techs don't have to come out when he gets back to Miramar. He's also calibrating gas, whether he has to land and refuel at the EAF out in 29 Palms before he goes home, all that stuff, and he drives into the ground. And it's awful. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, I've got a couple email questions about guns and stopping power for you. Mike Musselman, on a, you've become a legend with stopping power, man. Exactly. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Friday right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. Home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue. 9:41 here on the West Coast, 11:41 in Texas, the home of Michael Musselman, and it is 12:41 on the East Coast. So if you're eating lunch, what's up? All right, Gunner, you ready for a couple of gun questions?
Yeah, shoot.
Why do you say it like that?
Well, because it was a gun question, so I said shoot.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Here's the first one. Interesting little commentary by you two this morning about Director Comey. You guys seem to think you know a lot about leadership, so I can't tell you both that you don't know shit, even though that was my instinct. After your commentary, I rethought his whole I was stunned comment, and I grudgingly have to agree with both of you, although that was not my initial assessment. My initial assessment was to empathize with him being stunned and think his conduct was reasonable. I'm now rethinking that. Appreciate your guys' candor, always, and your willingness to say so over the air. Yeah, you're talking to people. We don't know how to do it a different way, Mike. The truth is the truth, and one of the reasons that Mike and I get along is, you know, it's, if we're sitting in a meeting and you want to run a line of bullshit, you know, at first, you've heard me say this, but we'll be very courteous in saying and ask questions and be articulate in terms of disagreeing and lay it out. But if you want to be a dick, we'll go there with you too. But what we're not going to do is sit there and listen while bullshit. While somebody pisses down everybody's back and tells them it's raining, and we've never done that, and so it made me feel bad yesterday for the FBI and for the nation that Comey shrank at a moment when the nation needed him. So, Mike, your thoughts?
Well, when you put these political hacks up onto a pedestal and you think that they're leaders, and then you say that, you know, I don't know shit about leadership. Well, I guess I don't. I mean, because I just don't get that type of leadership. You know, there are two different types of leaders, and I think what people get confused with is the other side that I don't associate as leaders, and those would be more like managers or bosses. You know, it's easy to tell someone what to do. It doesn't make them a leader. A leader is someone who inspires people to do things that they wouldn't be willing to do in the first place, and doesn't have to really tell them what needs to be done. They know what needs to be done because they're witnessing it through leadership of the individual that's leading them, that this is right or wrong.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say, they're not afraid. They're not afraid.
Yeah, well, true leaders. True leaders are not afraid.
Yeah, they're not afraid to General Dunford told me a story about one of the – I don't know. Mike might have been there. Were you there when he got promoted to Brigadier General in Ramadi?
Yes, I was there.
In the rotunda that day?
Yeah.
It was really cool. He gets promoted from Colonel to Brigadier General, and it was the place was packed. People started showing up, you know, and, you know, it's like, okay, where are we going to do this? And I have – you know, I have a role in making sure that everybody's lined up and all the documents are there, and he's got his stars and blah, 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 blah. Everybody knows what they're doing. So I'm kind of – and all these people start showing up, you know, guys from 7th Marines roll in from the western part of the of Iraq, you know. And it's just guys from MEF start rolling in. It's like, what's going on? And when we got ready to do the ceremony, and this is just a testament to the kind of leader that he is, it was standing room only. I mean, shoulder to shoulder, guys are there because they wanted to be there for this promotion. General Sattler promoted him. General Sattler was a staff platoon commander in Lieutenant Dunford's. Captain Sattler was a staff platoon commander at Lieutenant Dunford's basic school class. And so he starts talking about Lieutenant Dunford. It was awesome. Here in combat, seeing a guy like that promoted with his reputation and, you know, he's, you know, Navy Cross guy, leading the 5th Marines during the march up. Just a great guy. But as we were getting ready that day, I don't know if we went to breakfast or what happened, but he was telling me, he said, you know, Mac, I never thought I'd get here. And I said, why? He said, I thought I was going to get relieved as a battalion commander. In fact, I called my wife and said, hey, I'm probably going to be coming home. Just wanted to call you and prepare you. I said, over what? He said, well, I had a Marine that committed suicide, and my battalion commander, and people would know his name, so I'm not going to say it, but he said he told me to do something. The regimental commander told me to do something, and I told him I wouldn't do it because it wasn't right. And it was some kind of interaction with the parents or something in a report or something official. And he said, no, the truth, I'll write the truth. Now, when you're a commander, right, you're on the lieutenant colonel, you're, you know, it's kind of the first really competitive rung, lieutenant colonel selected for command, infantry guy. It's a big deal. You have a chance to go into the rarefied air of the Marine Corps, and that is the rank of colonel, possibly a regiment. When you look that in the face and say, it doesn't matter, I'm gonna do what I think is right, and if you don't like it, go to hell. I mean, that's what leadership's all about. And I think that's
right.
Those are the guys Mike and I are talking about when we say, you know, we know guys like that, and I'll tell you what, they don't come just as enlisted Marines do it, as corporals, as sergeants. You know, they'll look at people and they'll say, no, I'm not doing that. This is what we're doing. And they're strong leaders. And as Mike said,
it's
night and day from being in charge. Yeah. They're not in charge. They're right. Leaders.
Right. Yeah.
One more email about Comey. Let's see. Hold on. You guys are pretty tough on Director Comey. I think I disagree with your characterization. I think I would find the president more at fault than I would find Comey at fault. I do appreciate that he was stunned. Him leaking notes does disturb me, but I do tend to land more on his side.
Okay, so behavior. You look at Comey's behavior. His behavior is not. It's not that you would think that a FBI, a director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, would take that path, but he does. So you disagree with some of that disturbing, but then in the end you come out with, well, no, that doesn't make any sense to me. Again, you're in a position. You lead the FBI, the largest law enforcement agency in the world. And like you've always said, you have to be above reproach. Well, you have to be better than most. And here's a situation where, you know, where again, moral courage was pushed in front of his face, and he chose not to go down that path. Instead of coming back and saying, you know what, no, if I can't call an investigation, I'm not going to call it a matter. I'm not going to do these things. So he picks and chooses things. And, again, he's not the right guy for the job. And, again, I'm not defending Donald Trump because you know,
right.
I don't like him.
No, right. I'm with you.
You know, I'm not a big fan of Trump. I don't like his personality. I don't like his ego, and I don't like that crap.
Right.
You know, and I'm one of the first ones to say, yeah, get off Twitter, you idiot.
Right. No, I think what we're fans of is our – are many of his policies. You know, I think I think we're fans of that, and he's certainly, there could be better ambassadors for those policies than he is. But again, and let me get one more, another email just popped in.
Let me finish real quick.
Go ahead.
So when we're talking about people, like, you know, the interview that was just done recently with Secretary of Defense, they're mad at, and they said, they asked him, Mr. Secretary, what keeps you up at night? What defense secretary would have ever said, no one keeps me up, I keep others awake? I mean, there's a man that he means what he says.
All right, hold on one second.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a. He didn't say it as a joke, as a punchline.
No, it's just. Listen to it. If you haven't seen this, go find it. It's Face the Nation, Secretary of Defense. Go, because it's simply a question and an answer, plain as day, matter of fact.
It's not
It's not. He's saying it as a statement of fact, which is the best part.
Yeah.
Which is the best part of the whole thing. So here he is again.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
That's...
That's the person that's leading.
Yeah. He's not afraid.
That guy means it. He doesn't say things that he doesn't mean. He doesn't say things for political commentary or for little snippets. No! No. He means what he says. And believe me, if you don't think that there are enemies of America stay up at night because Jim Mattis is involved, then you, my sir or lady, don't know what's going on in the world.
No, and let me tell you, when he says, I keep other people, if you notice, right, what has gone on since he's become Secretary of Defense, there's been no announcements of what the DOD does, right? But more stuff has happened in and around Mosul that has been very positive for our interests. Things are beginning to happen in Raqqa. They're disciplined. They're not discussed publicly by the Pentagon. There is no big announcements anymore. Bad things are happening. And, you know, and so very interesting. Another kind of interesting email, Mike. Mac, interesting discussion you and the Gunner are having. Why do you think Comey took the tack that he took? So, Mike, what is it about Comey? Why did he not stand up for what he believed? What is that? Is that just
I don't think he believes in anything. Mm-hmm. He's a politician. What politician would put their career on the line for something they believe? Name one.
No, they don't. They constantly compromise it. To me, that's a pretty cool job. That's a pretty cool job.
Yeah.
You know?
You would think, yeah.
But I would contrast it with, so in my opinion, he doesn't have the gritted teeth kind of, when you talk to, when you see General Mattis testifying, and he gets asked a question, boom, you get an answer. It's a very different.
Or Kelly.
It's a very different demeanor. Or H.R. McMaster. Or who's the guy I saw on TV last night? He's retired now. I want to say his name's Casey, but it might not be Casey. He's awesome. You ask him a question, you're going to get the truth. If you don't like it, they don't care. But you're getting the truth. So. So interesting. I think a combination of he's not cut from that cloth, and that's a pretty cool job, because there's way too many compromises he made, especially with going back and talking to his people, deciding not to talk to the attorney general. It doesn't matter if it was just Jeff Sessions or not. What matters is, if the president put you in a position you thought was compromising, he should have gone directly to whatever. I don't care if Mickey Mouse was the attorney general. You go to the attorney general. The rest of the cards sort themselves out. That's your duty. You don't go back to the FBI and play war games. Oh, we knew Sessions was going to recuse himself, blah, blah, so we just kept it to ourselves. Bullshit. That's all bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. So, anyway. Anyway. Call me wrong guy.
No, I get it.
All right, where are you? Did you just walk in to have lunch?
Yeah, I did.
What are you having for lunch? Where are you?
I don't know. At a cafe.
All right. Tell Ralph we said hey.
All right, I will.
All right, bud. Have a good weekend.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, there you have it. Michael Musselman. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap things up on a Friday. If you missed it, Shish Kebab coming up at the top of the hour. Actually, my commentary, then Shish Kebab. Then you'll hear Ben Conable. The interview about Iraq is frustrating and astounding, to be honest with you. It is such a complicated piece, right? Iraq, ISIS in Iraq, ejecting them, right? ISIS in Syria, ejecting that. Does Assad stay? Does Assad go? Hamas is now trying to flex its muscle. We shot down one of their drones yesterday outside an exclusion zone that we've established in the southeastern part of the country. Okay? Then you have us arming the Turks, the Kurds, so that they can fight ISIS. The Turks and the Kurds, PKK, inside of Turkey, and the Turks telling us as a fellow NATO member, we don't want you to do that. And then what happens after we left, the Iranians kind of moved in and occupied Iraq. How do you eject them? Are they ejected? Is that a permanent presence? So Ben goes through all that. If you missed it, it's awesome stuff. And you can see what a treacherous, tough place that we have made by removing Saddam Hussein, who is no friend to Iran, who, believe it or not, at the end of the day, was no friend to Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda network. We began a series of events that is still unfolding, gotten more complicated, more treacherous. And I don't know that we've yet, if you listen to Ben, we've yet to articulate our strategy through this morass of situations that are layered on top of each other, and then throw Russia in the middle of it. Yeah. More of that coming up next on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with a serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our
a way of living, or a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That'll do it on a Friday. All Marine Radio, in the can. Another email. Mac, I tuned in late. What about Trump? What about Trump? I think, again, what is fair? He's a bully for his own perspective. That's how he became president of the United States. He's a bully with that Twitter account. If you're on his staff, you better be prepared for that. You better be prepared to look him straight in the face and tell him the truth, and then be prepared to walk away. And if you're not prepared to do that, then you shouldn't go to work for him. You know, when he says, "I need your loyalty," if you think that implies that I'm going to agree with you and do your bidding, you're wrong. You will get my honest opinion, and you'll get every bit of devotion I have to this nation. But I've sworn my oath to the nation, not to you. And it's important to me that you know that. And if that's not good enough for you, then, you know, you can find somebody else for this job. I'm out. And if you're not ready to say that, I don't, you know, unless you want to be a bobblehead for Donald Trump. But again, he prizes loyalty. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that prize loyalty. And so, in my opinion, Donald Trump is not afraid to go. He's not afraid to get dirty in it. He's a Manhattan guy, and he's got that kind of New York attitude about it. And watch now. I mean, he'll get after Comey. And so, anyway, but I don't excuse the president. And there's no doubt when he closed the door. And here's the question. He closes the door. The attorney general gets sent out of the room. And now, if you're Comey, what's going through your head? Like, I don't really know what's about to happen, but the attorney general just got sent out of the room, and I got told to stay. And then he says he was stunned, and that's why he didn't push back. Okay, that's where Comey fails, and he fails himself, he fails the office, he fails the nation. It doesn't make him a bad human being. He's probably a great guy. He seems like a great guy, but at that point, you got to be willing to look at him and say, "Sir, as a director of the FBI, I can't have this discussion with you. Are we done? Because if you continue to pursue it, I'm going to excuse myself." If you don't have the balls to do that, then you don't belong to the job. And let me tell you, to me, Trump is not a stupid guy. He walked it as far as he could walk it. And according to the testimony yesterday, it was never brought up again. So he made the point that he wanted to make, which was, I hope you can see fit to let this go. He's a good guy. Okay, is that illegal? No. Now, Comey says, I took that as a directive. Well, it's not. Anybody who understands an order, he could then ask you, why didn't you ask him to clarify it? Are you telling me? And so here's how the discussion should have gone. Mr. President, are you telling me, are you ordering me to drop the investigation into Mike Flynn? And here's this. I guarantee you, this would have been Trump's response. Of course, I'm not. What I'm asking you to look at is that Flynn's a good guy. He's paid enough. He hasn't done anything wrong, which may have been Trump's understanding, or it may not have been. Okay, but that's what he would have said. He hasn't done anything wrong. Now, that could have been Trump's way of just getting out of the conversation, but I guarantee you that's the way the conversation would have gone. Except the director of the FBI didn't have the balls to have that conversation. He didn't have the balls to have that conversation with Loretta Lynch. And then he became a leaker. Comey, to me, just struggles in that position. So it continues. And it doesn't let the president off the hook. But again, he's no stranger to that kind of shit. Trust me. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to walk it up to the edge. That's why the room got clear. But illegal? Broke a law? Probably not. And it's evidenced by Comey's behavior. If Comey would have thought a law would have been broken, as the top guy at the FBI, he had a duty. He didn't go. So the only thing you can conclude by his behavior is that he didn't think a law had been broken. And so it was interesting yesterday to hear him say in his testimony that, well, you know, I took that as a directive. Then why didn't you report it? And then you hear that stuff. So anyway, you have a president who's not afraid to get it dirty, and you have a director of the FBI who shrinks from his responsibility to the nation. Not a very good combination, you know, but it is what it is. All right. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. All Marine Radio. Starting its second year. Out.